514-790-0800 for your calls, 514-800 for your texts. We have a caller coming in. We have Diane on the line. Hi, Diane.
Hi, I wanted to ask the doctor if Respadil is a anxiety medication.
That's a really good question, Diane. I wish I brought my pharmacotherapy manual with me because I don't recall off the top of my head. I've had many clients have it, but I can't recall if it's specifically an anti-anxiety medication.
Most of, and we both Dr. Silva and I, as psychologists, we don't prescribe medication, so it's not really our primary area of expertise, though we do know a lot about the stuff. But Risperidone is typically a medication that's an antipsychotic medication. You might sometimes see it being prescribed along with other medications in severe cases of anxiety or depression. I've heard those, but primarily its first use is to treat psychotic disorders like schizophrenia, for example.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
That was very good and important. Thank you.
You're very, very welcome. I hope that was helpful. 514-790-0800 for your calls, 514-800 for your texts. We have another caller coming in. John, I'm going to ask you, though, if you could just stay with us, because in about 30 seconds we head over to traffic, and I wouldn't want to shortchange you from Dr. De Silva's expertise. So, Dr. Silva, we're about to head off to traffic, but you did mention that pharmacotherapy, though often used, does not empower the individual. So I guess the therapy that you're going to talk to us about in just a moment does empower.
It does indeed.
514-790-0800 for your calls, 514-800 for your text. This is Dr. Sydney Miller in studio with me, Dr. Domini De Silva. We're going to make sure before the hour is up, which is unfortunately way too soon, but we're going to make sure before we get there that we give out her contact information to you. As you can tell, a wealth of important and useful information coming out in this hour. 514-790-0800 for your calls, 514-800 for your texts. We have more texts and more callers coming in, so we'll get straight to them. Dr. De Silva, we have John on the line. John, good evening.
Hello.
Yes, hi, John.
Hello.
Yeah, Dr. De Silva. Yeah, thank you for taking my May call there. I was just catching you because I was doing laundry and I was coming back in, and I was hearing that anxiety attacks. And I'll give an example. I'm a person who was over 53. I had an anxiety attack when I was 22 years old. But nevertheless, I was an alcoholic throughout all the years. I never had any anxiety attack, but I had an alcohol withdrawal at 41.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, you were consuming alcohol significantly for several years.
Yes, since I was a teenager.
I see. And then you stopped abruptly at 41?
I was always on and off a drinker.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped through periods of a couple of years here and there. But I had an anxiety attack when I was like very young, 22 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an anxiety attack, as I know that I had to been put in a taxi with a friend, right to the hospital, and a doctor told me what I had. After that, I never had any issues with that. But I've been an alcoholic all the way through. And at 41, I have an alcohol withdrawal.
Okay, John, so are we trying to... Do you have a question, John?
Yeah, would the anxiety trigger that? If I had an anxiety, if I was feeling anxiety and if I just stopped drinking.
Okay, well, what's really interesting as I'm listening to you, John, is that it sounds like you had your panic attack fairly early. You were 21, I think you said, or 22?
Yes.
And following that, you've been consuming alcohol pretty regularly throughout your life.
Correct.
Is it possible, because one of the things is panic attacks are associated with a high amount of emotion and maybe related to situations in life that are difficult to cope with. Is it possible that the alcohol abuse was a method for coping with those emotions?
Put it this way. You know, a seizure of an alcoholic, you could flop and do the bacon and shake.
Mm-hmm. Right, so, John, but that's different than the panic.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't do that.
Right, I understand.
The opposite. And I just go right in an anxiety, and I sweat. I've been picked up by the ambulance twice.
John, I want to stop you for just a second there, because I think one of the things that is difficult in case of John is that, and we know this from any treatment, is that when you have alcohol abuse or drug abuse, it's often very difficult to figure out what else is going on with that person. Is there any underlying anxiety? There probably is underlying depression. There probably is. But these symptoms, the substances themselves, do such damage physically and create so many symptoms physically that if you have a person coming in and they're high on something, you have to have them off that something before you see if there's anything else going on.
So it's true that I agree that for the treatment, it's really the substance has to be decreased and eliminated first. But sometimes as the person is being weaned off, things that are underneath might come to the surface,
right,
or the person might feel really uncomfortable with being sober all the time, and that can create some anxiety levels that maybe are what you are talking about, John.
Right, I think that's very good. Thank you very much for your call, John. So John kind of leads us into the idea of treatment. There is another text here I just want to mention, but it's really, I'd say, outside of both mine and Dr. De Silva's expertise, because they're asking about what is the normal and standard period of time should a person be taking antidepressants and anti-anxiety medications before they have to be changed and or reassessed? I think it's an excellent question.
It's a great question. I mean, that's extremely variable. It depends on the person. It depends on the level of depression or anxiety that they're experiencing. And it depends on if the medication is working for them or not.
Right. And I think in general, what Dr. Silva is speaking towards, and which I think she would agree with me also in saying, is that you always want to have good medical, psychiatric/medical supervision when you're
Absolutely.
Taking medications, and you want to have a good dialogue with your physician so that you can say to them, listen, I'm feeling great, do I still need to be on this, or it's not really working for me, or there's a lot of side effects, I'm uncomfortable with them, because as Dr. De Silva is pointing out extremely accurately, it's very variable. Differs very much between patients.
Absolutely. And what was your dose at one point in your life might not be the same dose you need at another point in your life. So that's one thing. And if it's an anti-anxiety medication, or even an antidepressant medication, I would say that if you are able to get some kind of psychological treatment for it, you could decrease the dose that you need to be able to cope and function in daily life. So I would say don't just rely on the medication, but seek out therapy.
Excellent. So we had John's question, we had this question. It all leads us towards the idea of treatment, and we're going to run out of time way too soon. So could we spend a little bit of time, or the remainder of our time, in fact, talking about the psychological treatments that, as we said very, very beginning, are very, very effective?
Absolutely. And that's the really good news about panic disorder. As horrible as it is and it feels, there is really good treatment that can completely eliminate it. So when it comes to psychotherapies, there are many, many approaches. And many of these approaches are studied for different psychological disorders. And when it comes to panic disorder, the one that we found that works the best is cognitive behavioral therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe you can find various therapists who will use other approaches as well, but you want to find someone who also uses cognitive behavioral therapy for panic as part of the treatment that they propose to you, because it's ideally a treatment that is somewhat short term compared to many of the therapies that we know that could last months and years, and it can bring very good effective results.
So what would a person, say they enter therapy,
mm-hmm.
or they call you up and they say, I've been having these symptoms, and you identify that these are, in fact, panic attacks they're having, or maybe panic disorder and avoidance already as well.
Mm-hmm.
What would they expect to find once they came and saw you?
Okay, so one of the things that's really good about cognitive behavioral therapy is that it addresses all of the components of panic disorder. So we have many components that go into it. One of it is the cognitive components, all those thoughts, the imaginations that you might have of what might happen. So addressing that. We also have the emotions, all the sadness, anger, frustration, fear.
Mm-hmm.
We also have the physical sensations, butterflies in your stomach, nausea, palpitations, all of that, which also get addressed. And then we might have, let's say, psychological overlying states of like depression or worry about our future or feeling like a failure, these kinds of things, schemas about oneself and one's future. So these all get addressed in cognitive behavioral therapy. So I would highly recommend that approach.
What kind of techniques would be used in cognitive behavior therapy that a person may even be able to try on their own, or would you not recommend that they try some of this on their own?
Well, some of these things can be done on your own. Now, here's the thing. When it comes to attacking panic disorder, it's such a difficult thing to work on your own that I highly recommend having someone there to help you with it. Ideally, a professional, but if you can't, then at least someone who's somewhat knowledgeable, a really close friend or a family member who can help you, and then follow some kind of a self-help guide, because you really need to follow some steps and not just talk about it.
Right. So this talk therapy, just sitting and talking about what's going on, would not help.
No, it's a very specific kind of talk therapy, if you will, which does certain kinds of written exercises, certain kinds of practical exercises. So we'll have written exercises where we'll write down what are the feared things, what are the steps that you fear taking, and break it down to all its tiny little pieces. And then we'll confront you with those steps as part of therapy and help you master your sensations and your thoughts so that you can actually get to that next step and the next step until you reach that very highest step that you felt you could never do again.
So that's what we would call, in clinical terms, systematic desensitization, right?
That's right.
Breaking all the big issue down into steps that are gradually more challenging, but with each step of success, it's only one more little step.
That's right. And the written part of it, we call fear hierarchies. So we look at those fears and we break them down into hierarchy. So that's one of the things that we do. Other things that we do that often people know about, and maybe this is the most commonly known piece, is relaxation exercises. There's three different kinds that we can use and that we propose and that I use with my own patients. And so one of them is deep breathing exercises. And it's like retraining a person how to breathe. Because even in our everyday living, we don't really breathe properly, which is how we have that underlying level of stress going on. So that's one of the big things. The other thing is progressive muscle relaxation. And this is really great for those people who realize that they're kind of holding their tension in their bodies and their muscles all tense and they have back pains and they need to see the massage therapist all the time. And then I do visualization exercises, which help people who have these horrible scenarios built up in their mind of what's going to happen the minute they start walking to the front of the podium and start speaking. Well, we do some visualization exercises about how it could go differently, but also relaxation about, let's say, something that they enjoy, a very calm, relaxing place to be that they can do prior leaving the house or in that same space to counter their own physical symptoms and retrain their body to feel more calm in what they would perceive to be a threatening situation.
There's so many great tips you're giving. Unfortunately, we're out of time. But I don't want to stop there. I want to, please, if you could, give out the contact information so people can actually come see you and actually do these steps, these therapeutic approaches and techniques with you under your supervision. How can they reach you?
Well, one of the easiest ways is go to my website at www.nilminidesilvapsychology.ca.
And folks, you don't have to write that down. Just head over to cjd.com, the on-call show page. We have linked you to Dr. De Silva's site this evening. It's right there.
And if you need to call me, you can reach me at 514-969-0277, and I'll be able to do a brief phone call interview and see if you can see me.
Wonderful. We have one more message here. Caller Paul says, thank you for bringing this important issue to air. I agree with him completely, as I'm sure all of our listeners do. Dr. De Silva, thank you so much for a wonderful show.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
We hope to have you on again.
I shall be back.
Wonderful.